Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Baby, I know it. You want that love and feeling. Oh, that love and feeling. You've lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. A little bit of Righteous Brothers to kick off our conversation today about romance. It's necessary. It brings back a lot of memories. I, for example, heard that song for the first time when seeing Top Gun, infamous 80s movie. How about you?
I did see that film. My nickname is a Goose, of course, and so there was some sadness that Mr. Goose in the film departs. But yes, how can you go wrong with the Righteous Brothers on Valentine's week?
It's true. So people right now might be getting a little bit busy, a little bit nervous about picking out that perfect gift or that perfect card. Do you experience any of that angst?
You know, I myself, because I'm a single man, don't have to necessarily personally experience that sort of trepidation. But I have some dear friends who are trying to make sure that they get a gift which really communicates how much they love their wives and their girlfriends. And so I'm there for them. You know, I'm trying to give them some good advice, but I'm sure that you could give them even better advice.
Well, I have just found that it's not really about the gift as much as, and it's not even about the card or the sentiment that's communicated in the card. What my husband is really good at is choosing a card and then just writing things in the margins. And that kind of says, hey, this is personal. It's part of our life together. Yeah. He might mention some of the ups and downs of the year that we just experienced and maybe what we're looking forward to. The problem I have is I can't even come up with something as creative for him. So I feel the angst as well.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to do great because you're good with words. You've got a creative mind, and I'm sure that you're going to do it very, very well.
I'll just tell him that this show is for him because today we're going to talk about returning intimacy and romance to marriage. Regardless of how long you've been married, maybe you struggle with this. How do we get to that point that we were at the very beginning where that heart is pumping and you have that feeling and love and desire? Maybe you're not feeling that so much anymore. Well, listen in because Dr. David Clark is here today and he's going to talk about his book, Kiss Me Like You Mean It. And it's based on the book of Song of Solomon. Now, that was a book of the Bible that my parents, I don't know about yours, Ryan, but there was an age limit on when I could read that book.
Oh, there was definitely the same in mine. I remember the first time I experienced it in my Bible and mom and dad definitely saying, give it a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the years have passed and now you're ready to hear it. So we're going to let me introduce Dr. David Clark and he's going to chat with us about what it means to use that book of Song of Solomon to talk about intimacy and romance. Dr. David Clark is a psychologist specializing in marriage therapy. He's the author of several books, including the one we're talking about today. He's a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and Western Conservative Baptist Seminary. He's been in full-time private practice for 20 years. So, Dr. Clark, tell me, what does Song of Solomon tell us about passion in marriage?
Well, it has everything to do with marriage. Some of these crazy types and the very conservative people that know it talks about sex cannot go there, so that it has to be a metaphor for everything else. Baloney. It is about romance and love and passion and sex between two people that were married. And it's a beautiful book, and it tells you all you need to know, quite literally, about marriage.
So there don't seem to be a lot of places in the Bible that speak specifically to the subject of intimacy or passion or sex in marriage or passion in general. Is that what makes this book so important?
Oh, yeah. By all means, God makes it very clear, thunderingly clear. This, we part the curtain. We see two actual people, real people, and doing it the way God wants us to do it. Boom. And it works. So, I practice with my wife, and it works.
So that statement I made at the beginning of the show, I'm guessing that you've heard that a few times. In fact, you wrote in your book that one of the myths that occur between married individuals is this. They say when you realize the passion is gone, they face the sad truth head on, and they don't make any attempt to get passion back. So they say, cut your losses and move on. Get divorced. Find a new spouse. So God has something different to say about that, correct?
Boy, he sure does. He wants you to stay married, not in misery, but to get that passion back. And we now know the divorce rate is the same now in the Christian community as in the non-Christian. So Christians now are following along and going, well, we just better move on. People are so dumb, it's unbelievable. 7 to 10 years with the new person, you're going to be at the same spot. Don't do that.
Exactly. Well, there's a lot of tips you give in your book as to how to avoid falling into that myth. But mainly, you're saying that that's not what God wants for our marriage at all, correct?
No, he's not pleased with that. Now, he knows it's a universal thing. Happened to Sandy and I, my dear wife. Married 31 years now. It's hard to believe. 4 kids. We had all the same problems. We hit the wall. She kept having kids. I couldn't stop it. Anyway, so we really had busy life. I'm building a practice. We lost it. Nobody was getting divorced. I've always loved her, but we lost that in love. You want that in love feeling. God wants you to have it. So we had to figure out how to get it back. And the song tells you exactly how to get it back and how to keep it forever.
So give an overview of the song for people who did gloss over it in college or have never read it.
Well, here's the basic sketch. It is the story of the courtship and marriage, particularly early marriage, of Solomon and his bride, Shulamith. Solomon, of course, king of Israel. And Shulamith was someone that he met, fell in love with, and they developed a relationship. So that's what it's about. Many interactions in the book, of course, in terms of communication principles, how to handle conflict. They had one massive conflict in the book and how to handle that. That's there. Meeting real needs, romance is all the way through the book. The key in what I focused on is, because we are lacking passion as couples, is 8 key passion principles that I've taken out of that book. And man alive, they cover the waterfront. And if you'll just follow what the Bible says, practicing together, you will have passion coming out of your ears. You will.
One of the things that you talk about is that sometimes your spouse isn't the main priority for you. What leads us to get to this point where our spouse isn't our main priority, and what do become priorities?
Boy, it's so common. You start to lose it. You that in-love feeling, the infatuation drains away. Marriage pretty much kills it. We have it before marriage, and then we get married. And things start crowding it out, and so here's the key, we don't know how to get it back. We didn't know in the first place. Chemistry just gets you married. It's not going to keep you married. So people don't know what they're doing, and so naturally gravitate to other things that we can get some passion with, that we know it works. It doesn't work as well as marriage, of course. It could be the children. It could be your job. It could be your friends. It could be going to the gym. It could be your dog. I've had people come home from work. Their spouse is standing right there, and they're all over the dog, kissing and loving on the dumb dog. And the spouse, okay, put aside. So that's, I think, what happens. And then, of course, that makes things worse because you're even further apart. So I think that if people knew exactly how, step by step, how to rekindle things, well, they do it.
Well, it sounds like in Song of Songs that Solomon and his wife-to-be are indeed both friends and lovers. So tell me what the importance is of having this friendship.
Oh, boy, it's so important. They really have that foundation of friendship. And in fact, it's clear they did not have sex prior to their honeymoon night. Wanted to, had the feelings, it was discussed, but they knew they had to have that kind of self-control. Why? Because they were building the relationship. And their conversations are about very personal things and then day-to-day things and a lot about each other. So they were smart enough to know, we have to lay a foundation here. We have lost that in this culture. The numbers of Christian young people not married having sex is the same as those who don't know Jesus. Again, we're losing that battle. If we could build the friendship, there's plenty of time for sex down the road after marriage, but people don't seem to realize that, and they don't care.
Well, speaking of having a friendship with your spouse, I remember asking my dad, what was it that drew you to be attracted to Mom? And he said, she loved to do the things that I love to do. And I feel that way about my husband as well. We love doing things together and have found a way to just enjoy having that friendship.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the secrets. And Solomon and Shulamith didn't do spectacular things like huge trips and going here and there. It was mostly just being together in very ordinary settings and doing kind of things that they both enjoyed. So that's very important. My wife and I share that. And when you have that, boy, that's one of the secrets to the closeness.
Absolutely. Hey, speaking of spouses, it looks like on my board that my husband is calling in. I'm a little bit nervous to take this call, but
I think you should be nervous.
I think I have to do this. So let's take this call. You may have a question for you, and I guess I'll have to answer to the results. Marty, are you on the line?
I am. Happy anniversary, darling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm very much enjoying this conversation, and the line that I'm going to take away from it is, chemistry gets you married but does not keep you married. That is so true, and the good news for us, Joe, is that we do have similar interests, and we enjoy spending time with each other, and hopefully that will continue. We love golfing and traveling and exercising and, you know, hanging out at home and watching movies and doing stuff with our children together, so hopefully we can continue that, but I just wanted to call and tell you that I love you and wish you a happy anniversary.
Thanks, honey. You too. See you soon.
Thank you. I'm gonna keep listening, so I can't wait for more advice. Keep going.
Okay.
Bye. Oh, that was great.
Oh, that was great. But it's true. Having that relationship really makes a big difference when it comes to thinking about the fact that you're going to be with this person for the rest of your life.
Right. That's like a long time.
Let's hope so. Well, one of the things that you advocate and that the Song of Songs talks about as well is having that connection of listening and talking to each other. And you say that that actually takes a bit of preparation to get into that point where you are creating the atmosphere where you can talk and listen with each other. Talk a little bit about that.
I am convinced, and this is in my seminars as I speak across the country and marriage intensives that I do, and of course regular therapy with folks that are local, every couple has to have what I call couple talk times. The spontaneous, gosh, we're texting, we're talking over a meal, and there's a show on and we're talking, that is not communication. That is superficial chatter, and it will not connect you. So when you create on 4 days of every week 30-minute couple talk times, no kids, no pets, no distractions, no dumb phone, no TV, just the two of you going through certain stages I cover in the book, largely mirrored by Solomon and Shulamith, you will now begin to develop real intimacy. That's what we need. But you got to prepare. You got to be intentional. Otherwise, you're going to be not connected. And when you're not connected, Satan can play. He's not going to miss his chance, and then we got real problems.
Well, I'd love to talk about some ways you can get your environment kind of ready to have these chats with your spouse. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, why don't we talk a little bit about that, Dr. Clark? But in the meantime, if you're listening in and you have a question for Dr. Clark that you'd like to ask about intimacy or marriage or conflict within marriage, well, we'd love to take your calls. So give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-2484. His book is called Kiss Me Like You Mean It, Solomon's Crazy in Love How-To Manual. And we do have a few copies to give away. We'd love to get one in your hands if you have a comment or question for the show. So give us a call and we will hopefully talk to you soon. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
That song makes me want to get up and dance. It wouldn't be pretty, but it still makes me want to get up and dance. A little Michael Bublé, courtesy, of course, of Frank Sinatra. Love those songs, especially when it gets you thinking about marriage and the one that you love. Today we're talking with Dr. David Clark. He wrote a book called Kiss Me Like You Mean It, and it's based on Song of Songs, the words that Solomon and Shulamith. Do I say that right? Sometimes I get it messed up.
Shulamith.
The way that they're communicating to each other in a passionate way that creates this wonderful feeling of love within their relationship. So, of course, we all want that, correct?
Man, and we need it. No question.
We absolutely need that. I have told this story on the air before, but I remember when I was a young person, I traveled around the country a little bit, and I would often stay with families, and I stayed with this pastor and his family, and they did something after dinner that I said, I need that to be part of my life. I was single, but they would send their kids into the playroom for 30 minutes after dinner. They wouldn't even wash up the dishes or anything, and spend that 30 minutes sitting on the couch and just talking to each other. The kids weren't allowed in, and I thought, that is brilliant. And as I read your book, I realized that you advocate some of that as well. Why is that time so important, and how do we create an atmosphere to actually make it beneficial?
Well, it's critical. Sandy and I have done it for probably now 18 to 20 years, and boy, has it made a difference. These are the times we connect. It's just the two of us, private, great ambiance. No children is critical. Where children are, romance and passion go to die, so we have to get rid of them. And they will be involved, of course, many other hours of the day, but they're not to be involved in this, because if they're there, it's always about the kid. So if you can see it as absolutely vital, because in the quietness, and there are certain stages, of course, as you know, Joe, that I go through in the book and in the talk time, that can lead to deeper and deeper intimacy. But I say, yeah, work on the ambiance. If it's a living, it should be a special, warm and fuzzy place in your home. Probably not the bedroom, because that can be distracting, and maybe somebody will nod off or start groping. We don't want that to happen yet. If you do it right, that could, of course, happen afterwards. But it's probably living room, a little kitchen nook area, something quiet, something nice. I think, I love Michael Bublé. I dragged Sandy to a concert, Michael Bublé concert last year, and she loved it. Oh, it was great. Mm-hmm. It was us and a bunch of 90-year-old people, but who cares? I thought it was great. And he's very romantic. So you could have a little Michael Bublé on in the background because it's romantic. You're setting a tone. You might have a couple of drinks there. You're comfortable lighting. All that, I think, is very important. The children screened out. They're not to bother you. It better be an emergency. If the house is on fire, okay, tell us. If not, don't bother us.
Well, why is having that emotional connection so important to creating intimacy within your marriage, having those talks?
You simply can't have passion without it. Physical passion is the result of the emotional and spiritual connections you create during the day and during the several days leading up to that. Without that, you will lose the physical, because it cannot run on its own power. It has no power of its own. After the chemistry and the infatuation run out, year and a half, boom, you're done. Now to energize it, you've got to emotionally connect through talking and sharing and laughing together, spiritually connecting through conversations about your spiritual lives and how God is guiding and directing you, prayer together. And that's what happens, emotional and spiritual connections, what happens in those couple talk times. And so out of that, then we'll flow. You get the passion going in those two areas, then you're going to have great physical passion as well. That's God's plan.
Well, and God made us both male and female. We're made differently. And you write that every woman has a need for emotional intimacy, talking and listening, and that every man has a need for physical intimacy. Now, this may seem very obvious, but there's actually some really deep needs here, and they need attention. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, it's so important. The woman simply cannot respond, cannot feel loved, will not feel loved. Her needs won't be met, and she won't be able to respond and meet his physical need if she doesn't have the emotional connection. That's how important it is. It isn't negotiable. It isn't optional. She's got to have it. Problem is, most men don't know how to give that to her. That's where this book can be, I think, very, very helpful, based on the Bible itself. Now, he's got emotional needs, too. He's just not as aware of them. Once he starts meeting her emotional need, of course, she'll realize it's great. She'll respond to him. He then realizes, wow, this is great for me too. Then it flows into the bedroom, and we have two people interested in sex.
What's one way that a husband can fulfill those emotional needs?
I tell you what you do. You do what I do, the gentleman listening, and I've done this for years. I still do it. I have three little pads of paper. You can use your phone too, your iPad, whatever. But you've got some way to record during the day things that happen to you that you think would interest your wife. Do not trust your memory. You don't have a memory. Neither do I. I get home at night, if I haven't written something down that I think is funny or something spiritual or some crazy thing that happened with a business associate, well, then I got nothing. Samuel say, what happened today? I'll say, straight face, God's truth, nothing. You can't build a relationship and a communication process on nothing. But if I've written some things down, see, I'm preparing to talk to Sandy. She wants to know about me. And so if I got two or three things written down, and she likes the fact that I thought of her, and then we have our couple talk time, honey, I wrote a few things down that I wanted to share about my day. Okay, that's gold for her. You thought about me, and you actually have something to say.
Mm.
She got tired of carrying all of our conversations. Well, I had to step up.
Well, and that contributes to her being able to be talked and listened to. Now, what can a woman specifically do to meet a man's physical or emotional needs?
Well, the most important thing for a man is respect. There's nothing else that's even close. Okay, sex is close, but respect is number one. And so what that means, and Shulamith was a master at this, she praised him. There was a page in the book of the Song of Songs that she isn't praising Solomon for how he looks and physical attributes as well as his character. That's what a man desperately needs from his wife. She needs to be listened to and shared with, but he's got to have that respect. And so she's a master. You're looking good, and this is great about you, and your character traits, it never stops. Well, he drinks that in, feels respected, which actually helps him then meet her needs. So it's just a cycle of ongoing, you know, praise, response, praise, response. So you got to praise your man and don't stop.
Mm. We have a caller calling in from Minneapolis. They'd like to remain anonymous. I'm going to try to get this question in before our break. If for some reason we don't get it answered, then I'll have Dr. Clark answer it on the other side of the break. So you are on the line. What's your question for Dr. Clark?
Yes, thank you very kindly. I appreciate your subject matter. I know it can be delicate at times. One of the questions I had deals with couples in older life, not oldest, but, you know, in that post having children, bearing, you know, in the 50s and thereon, in regards to, you know, some women don't even, excuse me, my wife doesn't even want to kiss me. It'd be more of a challenge, like a special occasion to even kiss her, which makes it much more difficult for all the other relationship things. And along with that, now, this would be a further question down the road, be low income where you have less capacity to do things like go on vacation or special trips, you know.
Yeah, very good question. This is very, very common, and that's the bad news, where people just kind of shut down. It's usually going to be the man or the woman, and it's like, you know what, we've already had our kids, and I'm comfortable, and then the physical absolutely goes out, not even wanting to kiss somebody. Now, here's the truth, and I'm going to be firm here, but that is dead wrong, and that is actually sin. Now, what we're going to have to do is get her attention, probably a wonderful woman, but I'm in favor of a tougher love approach, not to accept that, because God doesn't accept it, but through a series of steps, we need to make it an issue, and we're going to have to find out why this has happened. Something in her life, her feelings of resentment, physical issues, how she views herself. Look, there's reasons for this that we can identify and we can fix. But I would not settle for that kind of marriage. Oh, my goodness. Not good. And with income, that really is an easy one to answer because, you know, we were poor, 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 poor. I was going through college and Sandy was working and we had nothing. And we were very happy. You can do all this romance and passion and it won't cost you a cent. That's the good thing. You don't have to go anywhere. You can do it in your own home.
Dr. Clark, we're going to try. We have to take a hard break here in about 10 seconds, but we are going to get a copy of that book, and then we'll bring you back after the break to add a little bit more to this conversation.
Welcome back to an encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. So great to have you with us today. We're talking to Dr. David Clark, who is a psychologist specializing in marriage therapy and is the author of 7 books, including the one we're talking about today called Kiss Me Like You Mean It, Solomon's Crazy in Love How-To Manual. And we've been talking a bit about praising each other, husbands and wives praising each other. But I wanted to give you an opportunity, Dr. Clark, to continue answering the question that we had before the break. So why don't I just let you lead into that, and then we'll go from there.
I'm going to recommend a series of steps here that are good for any issue that is really serious in a marriage and your partner, frankly, is not responding. I recommend this to this man. I would say, honey, to his wife, I want to meet with you in 3 days. And it's a very serious topic. It's about our marriage. I have something extremely serious and difficult to discuss with you. That's all he says. No kids, of course. I guess they're past the kid stage. No kids, no pets. There'll be nothing. This is at a certain time in their home. Let her sweat. Let her wonder what he's going to say. We want to build the momentum. Then in this conversation, you're going to be very honest about how much this issue is difficult and painful. It's killing you. It's hurting. You think it's hurting her. God is not pleased with it. You're gentle, but you're firm. You're saying, this is not how I want to live. I hope it's not how you want to live. And I'm very upset about this. I want to let you think and pray about this for a week. I want to take some steps to solve this. But let her, don't have her respond at the time, because it will be defensive and it won't go well. So I don't want you to talk. I'm just talking. 1 week from now, think about it, pray about it, process, see what God has to say. If she'll actually pray about it, God's going to tell her, you're wrong. There's a problem here. It needs to be resolved. So in a week, you'll have another conversation. We hope that goes a bit better. And you're asking her, even in the first conversation, honey, I want you to tell me, I know there are reasons. Is it me? Have I done things to harm you? You have resentment? Is it you? Is it how you see yourself? Something from your past bubbling up? I don't care what it is. Together, we can work it out. So the second conversation will often go much better. If it doesn't, well, then you're not going to drop the issue. You're going to continue to make it an issue. And it could be, if you need to, you might have to go to some more serious confrontations, even involving others. Matthew 18, 15 through 17 will be your guide. We don't want to do that, but we may have to. Because if this lady won't kiss her husband, their marriage is awful. It is terrible. It is without romance and passion. The Bible says that's not right. So I think the tough love approach may give them a chance to change everything around.
Thanks so much for answering that. You know, you mentioned conflict, and it is so difficult. I don't know why. Maybe you can lend an ear to that. But why is it so difficult within a marriage when you have a conflict or something you really want to talk about to actually bring that up? I mean, this is the person that you've devoted and committed your life to, and yet taking that first step is often the most difficult, even more difficult than having the conversation. And this gentleman may be in that situation. So I'm wondering if you can just chat about that a little bit.
Boy, it's such a big issue. I think we love our partner, and we don't want to hurt them. We don't really know how to handle conflict. We weren't taught that in our home. If mom and dad did fight, often behind closed doors, or if they did out in the open, it was not done well. So we see the damage it's done. We don't want to do more damage. And it's probably true in your marriage that when you've attempted conflict conversations, they have not gone well. Things have gotten worse. And so you realize, what am I bothering for? I think I'll just can it. But when you stuff it, then nothing can be resolved. I think those are the issues. You've got to just, I think what helps is knowing. And the book covers this, knowing exactly how to resolve conflict, both on the same page. It's always difficult, but it's doable. And when you know what you're doing and you practice it, that'll give you confidence. You can resolve anything. There isn't any issue you can't talk through successfully. So I think knowing how is huge. And you're not going to hurt each other, because there are rules about that. And I've talked many couples through this and taught them, and they end up really doing well with conflict.
Well, and when you harbor that resentment and you don't say anything, that just gives Satan such an opportunity to speak into your mind. And that seems like it would make it 10 times worse.
Oh, boy, you're not kidding, Joe. He never misses a chance. He is despicable. He is powerful. He's clever. He knows what he's doing. He can create things. But if there's a conflict that's already there, oh, yeah, he'll be doing everything he can to break you up. And he's doing a bang-up job these days. Mm-hmm. We want to start turning the tide back.
But as Christ followers, we have such a wonderful weapon and armor to put on, and that is that spiritual connection that we have with our Creator. Talk a little bit about that spiritual bonding that is necessary to take place in order to create passion and intimacy within a married couple's life.
Boy, it's vital. If there's one thing that's most vital, that's it. You mentioned that book I wrote called A Marriage After God's Own Heart. That's all about spiritual bonding. It's in this book, too. Two Christians that get married do not have a Christian marriage. That's just two Christians that get married. Two Christians that get married and put God at the center of their marriage and keep him there, that is a Christian marriage. If we can get that done through spiritual bonding, and we can, our divorce rate as Christians will go screaming down, 1%, 2%, maybe lower. People go crazy and divorce happens. Okay, I get that. But it should be way, way down. We're not putting God at the center, and so we are getting divorced at the same rate. So as I begin to teach couples this principle of regular prayer together, I say take 5 minutes of each couple talk time, that's four times a week, and have a five-minute prayer time, holding hands, each praying out loud. It is beyond powerful. It's a spiritual bond. Talk about your spiritual lives. You know how many couples actually talk about how they're doing spiritually? It's as close to zero as you can imagine among Christians. Well, we have to change that. I want to know what Sandy is doing spiritually, what God is saying to her. I want to know how I'm doing. Maybe I'm not doing too well this week. I have to tell her that. It's a discipleship relationship. So when we inject that into a marriage, man, that baby's going to take off. Passion comes right after spiritual bonding.
Well, and it seems that it would be such a wonderful way to communicate and your fears or what you're struggling with to have those conversations with your spouse as someone who you trust and are committed to and can speak wisdom into your life as well.
Oh, yeah. It's just so, it was such a great experience and a powerful experience. We were talking a bit ago about having, you know, things in common. This is the one thing, the one person we have more in common than anything else, and that's Jesus Christ. We share Christ and God the Father and the Spirit. So that's our main connection. Let's use it.
So you write quite a bit about those steps that we can take in order to work through a conflict. Can you talk a little bit about that to give us some encouragement that we can indeed do this?
Yeah, here are the simple steps, and but they work. And the same thing happens at my house. You, first of all, you choose one place in your home where you're going to have your conflicts. Even geographics can help here. Not never the bedroom, never the place where you're having your all-positive couple talk time. A kitchen table, lanai, utility room, some office. It's a neutral place you don't care that much about. That's where we're going to have most of our conflicts. When a conflict first happens, you don't dive into it because you're going to do the same old dumb thing. It's going to be a mistake. You schedule the time. If it's 10 minutes later, you're in better shape. You've prayed over it, and you're ready to go. When you get to the conflict place, it's always and forever one at a time. If I'm the one mad, and then Sandy's going to listen. I'm going to talk, and she's going to listen and reflect and help me feel understood. First critical click. Got to have that understanding first. We take a little break. We come back, and then Sandy talks to me. Now it's her turn. She has a point of view. Coming into a conflict, you have to know there are always two truths. Nobody's lying. My view, Sandy's view. So she gives her view, and I listen. She listened to me. Now I'm listening to her. Honey, you're saying this. You're feeling this. Her point of view. Get the second click. And then at that point, another little break, and then you come back, and the third phase is, what are we going to do about this? The anger's out, you've processed it, you've heard each other. Most couples never get that far, and then you can decide what you're going to do. So, I mean, simple, but if you practice it, as Solomon and Judith did, you will get it right, and you can resolve anything.
Mm. So then what do you say to couples who just want to quit?
Don't. Now, I'm speaking in place of God. That's what I always want to do. I'm looking at the Bible. There are very, very few legitimate reasons to get divorced. The vast majority of Christians and non-Christians who get divorced do so for nothing close to a biblical reason. So we know God wants you to stay married. And it's so easy to quit these days, and culture just screaming, quit, move on. You're only here for 80 years. You can find somebody else. You still have your looks. You could be happy. Baloney. It's a miserable trail. It's always the right thing to do the best you can to save the marriage you're in now. Now, if somebody divorces you, you can't help it. That's out of your hands. You'll be released. But I say, and I've seen this hundreds, if not thousands of times over 30 years, seminars and couples coming up afterwards and people I work with, of course, personally in the office, they have been at the point of quitting. They have not quit, and God honors those who don't quit. It's a faith issue right now. I hate your guts, you know, but I love God, and before Him, I want to keep trying. God will honor that, and any marriage can be brought back to be a great marriage.
Great advice from Dr. David Clark. He has written a book called Kiss Me Like You Mean It, Solomon's Crazy in Love, How-To Manual. And we've been talking about passion and conflict and all of those things in marriage that make it unique and special, and it's also God-ordained. So we are going to talk more about that when we come back after the break. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
We're back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
Rain,
much for joining us today on Connecting Faith. We're talking about marriage, passion, and intimacy in marriage. To be specific on that, we're talking to Dr. David Clark. And Dr. Clark, a lot of people are listening today who may not be married. They're either unmarried or maybe they're single or have been widowed. What can we say to them? How can they still learn from Song of Solomon?
Boy, they have a lot to learn. And the good news is before marriage or before your next marriage, you can get better prepared. So I think it's an ideal book for them to look and to process and to get some of these skills, look for a person who they can have these connections with. So, yeah, they're in actually a very good situation because they can really hit the ground running with the right information.
So you write about three great things that happen when you dwell on the positives of the person that you're married to. Boy, this sounds important. What are those three great things that are going to happen if you start dwelling on the positives?
Well, what's going to happen is the person who, let's say I'm praising Sandy. If I'm praising Sandy, then I am going to feel closer to her because I'm just, by simply saying the positive, it solidifies in my mind how great she is. So whatever I'm saying to her, boy, that makes me feel closer. Of course, it's obvious, the second thing, she is responding to what I'm saying. Makes her feel good, makes her feel loved and meeting needs. And boy, he must be crazy about me. So those are two wonderful things. And then just the third thing I would say is just the relationship is now closer. It is flowing. There's all that positivity. You know, we have negative in our relationship and things happen and we have conflict and we have differences. She does things that drive me nuts. You can only imagine how annoying I can be. I drive her nuts. But that is overwhelmed by the positives. And a lot of that is just what the things we say to each other.
You wrote that many couples have performed what you call the funectomy on their marriage without even knowing it. What's a funectomy?
That is cutting out, surgically cutting out all the fun and all the spontaneous, crazy things that you need to do that you probably did when you were dating. Life is not that serious. It's like a couple of accountants in a back room with the eye shades on. Stop that. We need to mix it up. This is crazy, but we love to watch old movies together. We'll watch an old movie and we'll pause it because I've got to go to the bathroom. Well, I will say, look, honey, I've got to go now. I'm holding her hands and making kind of a dramatic parting is such sweet sorrow. It'll be a few minutes. It's hard to say how long, but I want you to know that I love you and I'll miss you when I'm in the bathroom. It's stupid. And I kiss her face hard. I mean, how stupid is that? But it's something that you don't want to lose, that kind of thing. I never leave the house without putting a serious, gum-scorching, lip-smacking kiss on that blonde because that's what she needs. She craves it.
Well, in fact, you devoted, I think, a whole chapter, maybe two, to kissing your spouse and why that's important. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, talk about vitally important. I give this talk at seminars, and people hang their heads in shame. They try to leave the room. They're locked in. They can't go. I'll say, look, here's the kind of kissing you're doing right now, and I know you're doing it because I used to do it. And that's the pathetic little peck. Goodbye, honey. You have a nice day. You too. Just the briefest, nubbed-out Sahara Desert dry kiss. Stop that. But just shake hands and get it over with. It's about as exciting. You don't kiss that way. Stop giving the peck. Stop giving the poofy lip. I describe that as leaning far forward. The body parts can't touch. Oh, we have enough kids, thank you. Oh, come on. Get over it. You should come together in a hug when you kiss. The blown kiss, the dreaded cheek kiss, stop it. When you kiss your bride, your groom, your husband and wife, there ought to be the arms around, the body parts touching. You're not inappropriate in public. This is just the two of you. But I think kids also need to see a certain amount of affection. I'm not going to throw Sandy to the floor in front of the kids, but hey, I'm going to kiss her face because it's a face that needs kissing, and I want the kids to see that. So a lingering 10 to 15 seconds, my research shows, Joe, I think you'll back me up on this, and so will Marty, I'm guaranteed. You hold the lip open mouth for 10 seconds, you know what's going to happen? Saliva is generated, and that's what we're looking for. Everybody knows that a wet kiss is the best kiss. A dry kiss, it's like kissing a chalkboard. Stop that. And one kiss isn't enough. If I'm leaving two or three kisses like that, that's how I want to leave my wife, wanting more. That's fun. That's passion.
Absolutely. You also say that flirting contributes to passion. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
People think you're supposed to stop flirting, though, once you have the one that you're married to, correct?
I know. Once the deal is done, yeah. Like I killed the deer, and now I'm just lugging it back to the truck. It's over. No. we have all the technology now, which really enhances flirting, the texting. You can send a picture, not an inappropriate picture, of course, maybe with your lips puckered up. Look, we're Christians here. But it could be even sensual and kind of risque and thinking about tonight and how you look this morning and just stuff like that back and forth. Little stuff that's between a married couple, fine. Godly. God loves it. Well, and so that can really spice things up.
Speak to that person who's married, who's a Christ follower, who thinks that this behavior might not be appropriate for a Christ follower. I hear from a lot of women who just don't feel like they should be flirting or, the other things that you just mentioned.
Oh, I know. Gosh, isn't it fun being married to a librarian sitting behind a desk with their hair in a bun? You know what? It's not. We have to start loosening up. And I'm telling you, read the Song of Solomon. Read my book, Kiss Me Like You Mean It, based on the Bible. I'm not saying anything that's not rooted in Scripture. And God says, loosen up and flirt, because Solomon and Shulman flirted all the way through the book. Now, you're going to have to do it in your own style, but it's perfectly okay. You can sext your husband, doggone it. You can do it. Not nasty. But just something that would be, I'm looking forward to tonight, or, boy, you look good today, or, I mean, whatever. You mix it up, but there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, there's something wrong if you're not doing it. Because those very people that are so conservative, their sex lives are boring, 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 boring. I tell couples all the time, we find a way that works on the honeymoon, and then we keep doing sex the same exact way. I said, look, you're boring me to death just listening to this. Just videotape your sex and watch the tape. It's about as exciting. Stop it! We need some creativity, and flirting is a big part of that.
Well, you also write that there are some mistakes that contribute to no romance and no passion. Lack of romantic behaviors, comparing spouses to others, and, of course, absence of passionate kissing. So talk about those first two we haven't talked about yet. Lack of romantic behaviors and comparing their spouse to others. How does that kill the romance?
It just annihilates it, and people get so wrapped up. This can be entertainment people who aren't even real. They're playing characters. Or you see other couples and they look affectionate and they're having fun. You think, well, gosh, I prefer that. That would be a great person to be with. Satan can do a lot with that. You don't know that person. They're probably a jerk. You don't know what they're like. So don't do that. The person you're with now is the right person. And I think the key, other than not ever comparing, is to start focusing on the positives and voicing them and bringing back the romantic behaviors. You may even have to force it, but it will eventually work. When you're walking somewhere and you got a free hand, hold hands. That's what sweethearts do.
Mm-hmm. My husband calls me his bride constantly when he introduces me to other people. I feel like that's part of that.
It is. You are the wife of his youth, and you know what? You're stupendous. You're great, and he knows it, and he's saying that, and it makes you feel good in front of others. Candlelight dinners at home, watching romantic movies together. Kissing, I think, is a big part of it. Even short of intercourse, a massaging and giving wonderful, affectionate, sensual touches. Nobody else can do that, obviously, because it'd be wrong. Well, your spouse can do that. Although you start bringing those things in, we talk about it in the book, it might take a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months if you're really out of practice, but it will bring the passion back. It will.
So if someone has been married for quite some time, whether it's 5 years or 50 years, and they feel like something is kind of let go as far as passion goes, what is your best suggestion on how to just start getting that back, to make one first step to start getting that passion back?
Well, this goes without saying, but you need to read Kiss Me Like You Mean It. I'm just saying. But the key here, I'm going to say a couple things, but the key is to have an honest conversation, number one, about, okay, we've lost it. Let's be honest. Let's don't mince words here. I love you, but we've lost the in love. We've lost the passion. We've lost the romance. Would you agree? If both will agree, that's the starting point. People never even talk about it. We have a problem. Then you go to solving the problem. That's where the book can be helpful. We're going to start doing some things, honey, with the man hopefully leading. It could be the lady if he won't get involved first, but let's start doing things differently. And you specify exactly what it's going to be. We're going to have these couple talk times. We're going to emotionally connect. We're going to start talking spiritually. We're going to start praying. Let's get those connections first, and then you can start doing the romantic behaviors. It's just a package, and when you're following it, it's like a prescription from a doctor, and I am a doctor. It'll work. it will work.
Hmm. Well, just in talking with younger people who are not yet married or have just gotten married, to talk about that fact that it is so much more about a physical intimacy. It's really this emotional and spiritual connection that you have with your spouse. And I don't know that young people are always getting that when they're first getting married or getting together. How can we change that as older couples who may be mentors, or even just for our children? How can we change that trajectory?
We have to start talking about it. I think you've hit the nail on the head, Joe. We can do it on a church basis to a degree, but I think what's the most powerful is talking to your kids, to your family, friends of your family, young couples. Honestly, sit-down meetings, half an hour. You don't go on and on, but you'll say, look, we have some things to share. And because they know you, it will have an impact. And you can say, look, here's what you can expect after marriage. Trust us. And they'll tend to believe it because they know you, and you have their best interest at heart. You're going to have to develop. Be careful with the physical. We need to say that. Nobody's saying it these days because everybody's doing it. We don't want to offend them. Go ahead and offend them. Do not have sex before marriage. If you are, stop it now. God will still honor that choice, and you can get back to purity. Somebody's got to say it. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, start developing those emotional and spiritual connections now. That will flow into your marriage, and you will really be much better off. So I think if we start being honest about it, I think we can turn the tide.
Mm-hmm. Well, there may be people listening who need some additional resources to be able to have these conversations, not only with their spouse, but perhaps with their children or people who are considering getting married. You said that you have some of these available on your website. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I would love to, since you asked, since I begged you to ask me. DavidClarkSeminars.com. Everything David Clark is on there. Bible-based seminars and, of course, a bio of me, all the books. I've written 10 books now.
Mm.
I am prolific, if nothing else. I got a brand new book coming out that I'm very excited about. The Top 10 Most Outrageous Couples of the Bible, coming out in June. Oh, boy. Folks are going to love that. Of course, Bible-based, as this Kiss Me is. So everything's on DavidClarkSeminars.com, Clark with an E, seminars, plural, and a lot of helpful materials. I do phone calls, of course, for a price, email sessions, advice. Folks across the country can avail themselves of that, and even one time can make a difference.
Hmm. We have a couple of minutes left. I'd love for you to kind of share that final piece of advice if someone wants to talk about, we were talking about positives, if they want to get started on just laying that groundwork, laying that foundation for just creating a better relationship with their spouse. How can we encourage them to do that with just focusing on some positives in their lives?
Here's what I would do. I would sit down, and you and your spouse, and you write out 14 compliments for that person. And it could range from what they look like, because you find them attractive, and that's important. That's biblical in the song. It's character, a bunch of character traits, things they've done for you that you appreciate, spiritual qualities, 14. And then you spend the next 2 weeks and you deliver, or it could be even in a week. You can do one of two things. One compliment a day for 14 days, that's 14, or two compliments a day. I even like that better. Two compliments a day for 7 days the first week. You're going to get a lot of bang for your buck, and it will feel good, and you'll start to realize, oh, this is how it works. And frankly, it's something you'll continue to do. I'm not doing my job as Sandy's husband if I don't praise her today. Now, she's my secretary, too, so I can thank her for working here, putting up with me, the things she does with our children, how beautiful she is. She's a godly woman. She's working for a Christian camp called Camp Cedarbrook, a wonderful place. I mean, that's my job, and I need to hear positives from her. So I would start with that, and it will go a long way.
It's like a gratitude journal that you possibly keep at night, looking at three things that happened that you can have gratitude for throughout the day. This seems like a great way to get started, to be able to have gratitude for the person that God has given you to spend the rest of your life with. Dr. David Clark, thanks so much for joining us for the hour. You've given us lots to think about and lots to laugh about, and just to hear God's word and his plan and purpose for marriage. So thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, Joe, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Well, if you have want to get a copy of David's book, certainly you can go online to his website that he mentioned earlier, and we'll also have a link to that on our website as well. Have a blessed day.
And this has been an encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk with you again soon.